Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, April 20th, and this is show number 146. Well, you might be wondering why the show music changed. It's because I'm singing happy birthday to myself and my darling husband, Steve. Turns out we both turned 50 today, or as we prefer to refer to it, we turned 100 today. How fun is that, to get to turn 100 with your best friend, your husband, the man you love? This is great stuff. So I thought today deserved a little special music. By the way, that music, that happy birthday song, is courtesy of Cramo, and I put a link to where you can buy his music at soundclick.com. Well, good friend of the show, Rose from Australia, had quite an adventure this last week. As you might know, Leo Laporte went on a photo shoot to Tasmania, Australia last week, and he ended up in the small town of Hobart, or as Rose calls it, Slobart, which happens to be right where she lives. Anyway, as you also might remember, Rose begins every audio entry to me with, "G'day, Al." Well, she actually got a chance to meet up with Leo. She made him take a picture for her with him holding a sign that says, "G'day, Al." It's hilarious. I just love this picture. He's sitting there going, "Dee," you know, looking all dorky and everything like he does. It's adorable. She was surprised he didn't remember me, but I said, "Oh, he acts like that every time. He's just, you know, pretending. He really does remember me." Anyway, I did put the photo in the show notes, and I think it's hysterical. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So I might be a little distracted from time to time as I'm doing this recording because I'm doing it live on Ustream. So we have, I don't know, around a dozen or so, I don't know, 8 or 10 people in there watching me do this, which again, looks like watching paint dry, in my opinion, but they're pestering me, which is good. So I keep stopping and starting and paying attention to what they're doing, not paying attention to the recording like I should. So I'm doing my best, though, so we'll see how I can do here. Oh, I do hope you have a lot of time today because I got a lot of material. People have been sending in great stuff, and I've actually put a couple of reviews off 2 or 3 times so far. So going to try to catch up a little bit. We'll see how we do. Last week, I explained that I think one of my problems with Time Machine is that it backs up too often. So my disk gets full before it ever gets to the weekly until disk gets full part. So it's supposed to do what, hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, and then the monthlies till it, or weekly till the disk gets full. But I think it fills up before that, and then it fails. So I asked my friend David Sparks if there was a setting in Time Machine that I could change that schedule, and he wrote back, "There is no setting. Steve doesn't trust us. It would be too many buttons. He just wants one big button. No little buttons." David Sparks is hilarious. Over at MacSparky.com, by the way. Well, comedy aside, I do think it's bad design, but I asked last week if anyone had a hack for Time Machine that would let you affect the schedule, say backing up daily instead of hourly. I got a bunch of responses from people. I'm sure I won't list everybody here who did send it in, but maybe at least the first ones. Brett Brady and Pat Putnam both sent me a link to Time Machine Scheduler from Klime.com, K-L-I-E-M-E. As always, the links are in the show notes. According to this site, Time Machine Scheduler disables the automatic backup function of Time Machine and installs its own LaunchD agent. As the agent is located in the main library, the administrator password is required for writing operations. Except disabling Time Machine, no further system files and preferences will be touched by Time Machine Scheduler. Ah, that one makes me a wee bit nervous. You know, I've edited some LaunchD stuff before. What was that problem? It was something to do with .Mac syncing was messing me up at work, but I did so with trepidation. So Jeff Miller, amongst others, sent me a link to a different tool. It's called Time Machine Editor from timesoftware.free.fr. Oh, also Chin posted a comment on the blog about both of these tools. This one sounds slightly less scary, though, because at least it tells me how to get rid of it if it doesn't work out. According to the website, Time Machine Editor merely updates a system configuration file to change the Time Machine scheduling. It's probably doing that same LaunchD thing, but it didn't scare me by telling me about it. Nothing is installed in your system, and you can easily revert back to the default settings using the Show Default Settings menu item from the Settings menu. Once you've changed the scheduling, you can still use the Time Machine Preference pane from System Preferences as you did before. I think I'm going to give Time Machine Editor the first try when I get a breather. I'll let you know how it works over time to see whether that actually works. Well, last week during Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart, we were talking about the GIMP, and I mentioned a key difference between the GIMP and Photoshop Elements is that Photoshop Elements does not have curves. Well, Gerard from the Netherlands sent in this polite correction. In the new Photoshop Element 6, there are levers on curves. I heard you and Bart speak about it on your last podcast. I own the new Element 6.0, and it's worth every dime. Also, the scanning issue of yours, cropping, straightening, saving to multiple images, is solved with Element 6. It takes a scan with multiple images and makes separate straightened and cropped images of them. Save me hours of time. Well, thanks for the correction, Gerard. I had no idea that it could do that. And I actually have Photoshop Element 6, too. I just bought it a little while ago, and I have not taken enough time to really start poking around under the hood. I haven't done any scanning in an awfully long time. In fact, my scanner doesn't even work under Leopard, so I have to go use my Sun scanner. But I did. I have thought about going through and actually scanning in some of my old photographs. I've got all my old family photographs from my parents done, but I haven't done my own. So it would be nice to have digital copies of those, too. Well, it's time for the long-awaited, long-promised interview with none other than Honda Bob. How are you doing today, Bob?
Hello. I'm doing real good.
Well, so far today, Honda Bob came out to fix one of our cars, and I kind of tricked him into fixing my ping pong table, so that's good, too. We wanted to I wanted to introduce Bob to you because he's I've told you he's a geek, and he uses a lot of interesting software and definitely is crazy about his laptops and iPods and all kinds of stuff. So you were talking to me about how you keep track of all your appointments and stuff. Tell us a little bit about that.
I use Microsoft Outlook. I don't use the Outlook Express because it doesn't really have enough in it that I can use. I usually schedule 1 to 2 weeks in advance when I make an appointment. And I use that to schedule different appointments so I know where I'm going, and I try to schedule it for the same general area for that day.
Yeah, remember, he's a mobile service, so he's got to be showing up places.
Yeah. I go to the same areas. I try to schedule to go to the same areas on the same day so I don't use so much gas because it is pretty expensive.
Oh,
nowadays.
That's a good point. Yeah, you got to pay a lot to do your job.
Schedule my route at least a week in advance.
To be efficient with it, right?
To be efficient with the route. And I do schedule it with that, with Microsoft Outlook. And I also use that whenever I get a phone call, I use the task function of Microsoft Outlook to record my phone calls.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I have it set up so that whenever I do make a phone call, I can mark it off as a completed call.
Okay, cool.
Or if it's in progress, I can put it in progress to know that I got to call them back for something else to follow up on a price or something or whatever.
Now, you carry your laptop in the car.
Yes.
Tell them how you got that thing mounted. I love the way that's done.
I have what's called a Giotto desk bolted to the floor. And it has several articulated arms with a desk on the top of it that just fits the laptop. And since it's in my car and the cover of it is a bright red, my new laptop, I have a black rubber sheet that I fold over the laptop when I'm not in the car.
Because who would think that it would have a laptop in it, right?
I think people looking at it would just think it's a desk or something. They wouldn't think it was a laptop sitting there.
Now, when you're done working on somebody's car, do you enter information live right there
in
the laptop?
Yes, I enter it right there on the laptop. I can pull the laptop over to my driver's side and do my typing on there. After I finish figuring everything up on the invoice, I take my printer out of my briefcase.
You got a printable printer right
put
there.
Put the printer up on the dash. And I have one of those extending, retractable USB cables that I plug into the printer and I plug into my computer. And I just hit print and it goes right to my printer. And I print out a copy of the invoice. I mean, the printer of the maintenance record right there on the spot.
That's right.
To the customer.
We always get a maintenance record and you've got photos in there and all kinds of stuff.
I got a photo that I take a photo of the car. Whenever I work on the car, and then before I put the photo in the file, I actually use photo. I can't remember the name of the program. All of a sudden,
some photo program.
It's a photo photo editing program that I use to put the customer's name right below the car.
Okay, so it's always attached to it.
It's always attached to it. Yeah, okay. I attach the name to the car. I print the name in the picture below the car, and then I print the picture. Insert the picture in the maintenance record and then print the whole record.
And that's in that database we were talking about last week?
Yes. All that information is in the database.
Is that InfoSelect? Is that what that was
called? It's InfoSelect 9.0.
Okay.
It's MicroLogic is the name of the company that makes it. MicLog, you mentioned it last week.
Right, right.
They make the program. And it's a very versatile database. I was using it before just to store information from business cards.
Okay.
And every year I would upgrade it to the newest version. It started out with version 3 about 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And then 3.2, 3.5, and then 4, 5, all the way up to 9.0. I think it's 9.007 something. I don't know.
BLQ
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's got a big extension on it, but I just use it 9.0.
Now, are most mechanics doing this kind of stuff nowadays, keeping database records themselves?
No, they're not.
Creating their programs?
If you work at a dealership, the management is in charge of things like that. The
okay.
mechanic, all he does is work on the car, and he goes home.
Okay.
That's all he does. I don't even think they have a computer at their workstation.
Wow.
Unless they're diagnosing the car with one of the computers that you need to do that.
Now, you've got a little portable computer thing that you hook up to our cars.
Yes.
What is that thing?
It's called an OBD2 reader. That little 16 port plug that you have under your dash is the OBD2 connector.
Okay.
Cars from 98 to present all have this OBD2 connector.
Is it on all kinds of cars or just Hondas?
Every kind of car.
Okay.
If you have an onboard computer, you have an OBD2 connector.
Okay.
And the device that I have is designed to read just Asian cars.
Oh, interesting.
It's not for all kinds of cars. It's just specifically for Asian cars.
Even if they were made in Marysville, Ohio?
It doesn't matter where they're made.
Okay.
I mean, Honda's.
The manufacturer.
Honda,
okay.
Acura, Toyota, Nissan, Subaru, all the Japanese cars. Asian
okay.
cars,
Korean.
What they are. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll read all, though. It'll read the American cars, too, but it'll just show you a code. It won't tell you what the code means.
Okay, this reads out the code to you, but it tells you what it means?
It tells you what it means also.
Okay.
That's why I have there's a little plug-in on the bottom of this device that has it's a module for Asian cars. They have different modules for different kinds of cars.
Okay, so that tells you what's wrong with the car.
It tells you exactly what's wrong with the car, and then when I figure out what the code is, tell you what it is, I can go into another machine that I have to test that particular sensor.
Oh, okay.
In other words, if
okay.
you have a problem that shows a code 42, mm-hmm. in other words, that's an oxygen sensor.
Okay.
If it shows that the oxygen sensor is bad, I will use another multimeter that I have to actually test the oxygen sensor
okay.
on the car to verify that it's bad.
So it could be a red herring?
It could be just an intermittent problem. If it's an
okay.
intermittent problem, I'll let it go. I'll reset the code mm-hmm. and let the customer drive the car for another while until the light starts coming on more consistently.
As long as it's not some sort of catastrophic
thing. Yeah, as long as it's not a catastrophic thing. Well, even with Hondas, even if it is a catastrophic failure of one of the sensors, the computer goes into a backup mode to where you can still drive the car.
Okay.
It's very rare that you would see a Honda stuck on the side of the road unless it's got a flat tire. Because if it's got a problem with the computer or one of the sensors, it goes into a backup mode that allows the car to be driven at a lesser pace,
oh,
but
okay.
you're still able to drive the car.
Okay.
Hondas are not known for leaving you stranded on the side of the road.
Now, you know I've had 17 flat tires, right?
Yes.
I had 17 flat tires
inside
of...
And they're all in the rear, right?
No. Actually, I don't remember, but they were. That was over a course of just about 2 years. I had 17
wow.
flat tires. Unbelievable string of bad luck. It's actually, I'm counting a few that other people had because I was in the car and they'd get a flat tire. I was having
wow.
trouble getting rides for a while there, you know?
I can see why.
But that's been a long time. I'm going to knock on wood here.
Yes.
I haven't had one in quite, but I'm really good at it now.
What, detecting a flat tire?
No. Detecting.
Causing a flat tire.
No, changing the tire. All right, Bob. Well, I think this has been a lot of fun. I'm glad people have been begging me to hear from you directly. And anytime
well,
you want to do an audio.
Now you've heard from Honda Bob.
There you go. We finally got her done.
Yep.
All right. And how can people find you, Bob?
I'm at HDA Bob's mobile service at hdabob.com.
And email.
And my email address is hdabob@aol.com.
Or they can phone you at.
Or they can phone me at 562-531-2321.
And Honda Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide.
Right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed finally meeting Honda Bob. I thought it was a lot of fun to get him on the air there a little bit so you get a flavor of what he's all about. Well, I was really happy with that audio. By the way, that was recorded using the Zoom H2 that I talked about when I first got it. I think I got it for Christmas from Steve. It's just a little maybe cigarette pack size recorder that's about $200, but it's got fabulous microphones in it. Sounds a little bit hollow. We were in a room in our living room where we have walls and we don't actually have curtains. We still have the mini blinds that were put up in our house when we first bought them. Again, another symptom of when two engineers marry. There's no decorator genes in either of us. But so that room's a little flat, but I still thought it sounded pretty doggone good. So really enjoyed that. Well, Hannes from Austria sent in another review for us, and I really like his reviews. I love his voice, and his content is fantastic. Let's sit back and listen to Hannes.
Hey, this is Hannes from Austria with my second review for the NoscillaCast. I looked around for something to talk about this time and searched the archive on the website for mentionings of some of my install first on a new Mac apps. I was surprised to find nothing about the Macility tools. These tools are produced by a company called Agonis, located in Austria near the university where I studied. The boss of this company even taught me some programming. Anyway, to the programs. The Macility tools are four separate programs. PopChar, EasyQ, Typinator, and EasyBeat. I'll skip EasyBeat because I've never used it, but the other three applications I use regularly. I'll start with PopChar. This is a small application which displays all possible characters from a given font and allows a simple click to insert this symbol into the current document. For most applications, it can even auto-sense the currently selected font. I find this exceptionally useful when I want to use arrows or mathematical symbols. The application also supports pasting plain text, style text, and even those codes needed for HTML display. PopChar is also available for Windows and costs €29.99 with 2 years of upgrades. After that, you'll have to buy an extension for €14.99, or you can also stay with the older version without upgrading. Next in line is KeyQ. This is a background application which helps you to remember and learn the keyboard shortcuts. When you start using a new application, you soon notice that some tasks you often perform simply get done so much faster when you remember the shortcut instead of moving the mouse around and searching in the menu. KeyQ helps in this case, at least for shortcuts with the Option key. Simply hold down the Option key for slightly longer than you usually hold it for a shortcut, and up comes a nice exposé-like window showing all the possible shortcuts, even highlighting the current ones if you use combinations with Alt, Shift and Control. You can even select one with the mouse if you really want to. This works great for almost any application, even for TextMate, which has the greatest number of shortcuts available that I've ever seen. KeyQ costs €19.99, renewal after 2 years is €9.99. Last but not least, there's Typinator. I'll talk a bit more about this application, mainly to compare it to some similar applications Allison has mentioned before. Typinator is an auto-typing application, similar, but not quite, to TextPander, TextExpander, or Type-It-For-Me. It supports drag-and-drop import from these applications to make the transition easier. Recently, version 3 was released, which puts the application, finally, into menu-only mode without yet another dock icon. The main feature, which I found that's different to the competition, is that it allows not only to insert plain or formatted text, but even images. It's also a simple startup program instead of a system preference, which allows easy uninstall, and has application-specific settings. It's available for €19.99, renewal price is €9.99, which makes it also cheaper than TextExpander or Type-It-For-Me. A free alternative previously mentioned would be RapidoWrite, but this is not so feature-rich. You can also use Typinator as auto-spell correction. There are some built-in corrections, and if you need more, there's a whole additional dictionary available for download from the website. So, to go on a shopping spree, go to Macility.com or Agonis.com. You can also buy all three applications in a bundle, saving 35% off list price. By the way, if you're thinking about buying Typinator, there's a nice opportunity currently running. Mac Update Promo offers a new applications bundle. One of these applications is Typinator. This promo runs for 2 weeks, starting the 16th of April. Currently, you get 7 applications, but if enough people buy the bundle, all 10 applications are unlocked, maybe even a surprise 11th. Usually, the currently locked offers are unlocked easily within the 2 week period. The last target will unlock Parallels Desktop, bringing the total bundle value to over $400. I bought the last bundles and I was always satisfied, so if you don't own most of the applications like I do already, go buy them. Maybe Allison could also put an affiliate link in the show notes so that $3 per purchase go to the podcast we all like to listen to. Oh yeah, just some notes on stuff I wanted to comment on. Firstly, Bracketeer and Aperture. As you may know, I use Aperture for managing my photos. Drag and drop does not work from Aperture to Bracketeer. Is that only me? I tried to write to the developer, but either my email got lost or I'm not worth an answer. Second, Twitter. There's a nice video to explain Twitter to your non-computer savvy friends at www.commoncraft.com/Twitter or at the YouTube link in the show notes. Well, I hope I showed you some new applications and see you next time.
Well, Hannes, thank you so much for such a great review. And I really appreciate the fact that you also included the show notes that you read from, because that really helps a lot of people out to get the go back and look up the names and go, oh, what did he call that? I can't remember which one that was. And we've got the links in the show notes. So that's fantastic. You managed to pack in a lot of applications into one review. There's got to be something for everybody in there. All of the tools sounds pretty interesting, but PopChar and KQ both really caught my interest. As you suggested, I will be putting a link in the show notes to the Mac Update promo, and it was really nice of you to put in the affiliate link. If you guys are interested in buying the bundle, please use the affiliate link. Turns out it only kicks in a little cash for the NoSilicast if a lot of people do it. So if you're going to buy it, push the button. If you're not, don't. It's no problem. But it would be really fun if you push the affiliate link. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. And we're actually recording early. Today is actually Friday. We normally do it on Saturday, but we're just wild and crazy today. How you doing, Bart?
I'm doing good. And, well, sort of the main reason we're doing it now is because my broadband has gotten really bloody cantankerous again.
Not ice. You mean ice isn't doing well?
Yeah, I mean, ice isn't doing well. So it was really, 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 really insanely bad earlier with latencies of 2 seconds and packet loss of 12.5%, which is pretty bad, and certainly you can't Skype over that. But then all of a sudden, we sort of had this window of clarity where the packet loss has dropped down to zero for now, and the latency has dropped down to 0.5 seconds or so, which is our normal. But the speed is still absolutely terrible. But we figured, you know, strike while the iron is hot.
It sounds like it's pretty darn good to me. I think we sound okay.
I think we sound okay, but if I so much as open a web page, this whole connection just collapses in a heap, because literally Skype can just about fit through the teeny, 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 tiny pipe I have at the moment.
I love it, I love it. All right, well, maybe we should get started while ice is behaving for a few minutes here. Let's see, we wanted to talk a little bit about Evernote, and Evernote's been all the rage. I think we might have talked about it a little bit once before when it first came out, but this is a tool that allows you to take notes on your cell phone, on your Mac, on your PC, do it through a browser, do it through a cell phone, put up images, take clips off the web, all kinds of things to just help you gather the information of your life together. And you've been enjoying using that, Bart?
I have, for the very simple reason that what I've always, always wanted is some way to have the same little sticky notes in work as at home. Now, it'd be really great if it had the sort of form factor of sticky notes, but it doesn't. But the fact that it synchronizes the notes, that's it. That's all I wanted. And it does that. It has made one duplicate on me so far in the 3 or 4 weeks of using it, but that's pretty decent. And, you know, it allows you to have separate notebooks. I have notes for work only, I have notes for home only, and I have notes I have everywhere. So I have it all nicely worked out, and I'm very happy with it. I know it does way more. It does things like, it claims to do way more, like image recognition and all that kind of fancy schmancy stuff. But I don't care about any of that. I just care about the fact that I can synchronize my stuff. And that's it.
Now, are you typing text notes back and forth? Or are you taking pictures and web clippings and all that kind of stuff?
Mostly text. I see, whenever I figure something out for the first time, I like to take a note of it, which used to just clutter up stickies everywhere. Oh. Whereas now I just fire up Evernote and stick in a new note.
Oh, I see. Maybe that's a pretty good use for it. Somehow I had this image that I had to be doing clever things with it, like web links and images and things like that.
No, there's no need to be clever. I mean, what kind of stuff have I got? I have how to make Yum behave itself on CentOS 5, how to build Subversion on FreeBSD, how to blank disks on DEC alphas, if you remember those. Repairing quotas, you know, loads of little bits and bobs that make me grumpy in work, and I take a note of them when I find out the solution, because I know a year, 6 months from now, I'm going to have to do the same thing on a different server, and I'm going to be sitting there going, okay, like, why can't Yum just, or CentOS, just have one place for you to define a proxy? Just the one, instead of having a one place for this thing, and one place for that thing, and one place for the other thing. And it took me absolutely hours to get it through our proxies and work. So that made me grumpy. So I took a note of it, and now the next time, should be trouble-free in theory, touch wood, etc.
Now, what I do at work now, when I want to remember something like that, is I throw it up on the wiki at work, because I figure if I want to know it, maybe somebody else wants to know it, and anywhere I am at work, I'll be able to get to it. So instead of just having the notes for myself, I like having notes for everybody.
Can you get that from home, though?
No, but I can't get into work from home anyway. So, and why would I want to work at home?
Yeah, but see, me being the techie person I am, I'd be doing exactly the same kind of silly stuff at home. So
yeah, that's
the fact that I can sync it to my home Mac is the big deal for me.
I see. That's good. So now, one of the things that they said it was going to be good at was doing text recognition. So, like, if you took a
photograph, yeah, you tried that.
Be able to get it. Yeah, I was not impressed with it. I just didn't find that it's doing it. In some cases, pure text, like where I've taken a photograph of text, not handwriting, but text. Printed text, and it's getting it maybe half the time, if I'm generous. So that's not quite the promise that it was supposed to be.
No, that sounds nothing like what they promised.
No.
I haven't tried it at all, because I have had no texty things, or no photographs of text of any sort. So I just haven't had an opportunity to try it, and I don't imagine myself having one very often, to be honest.
Well, the guy that the president of the company, I guess, did an interview with Tim Verporten of the Mac ReviewCast that was just riveting. I mean, it was such a great interview. And one of the things he said he used it for that I really resonated with is he said, I go into a restaurant and I have a great bottle of wine and I think, man, I want to have that wine again. I want to go look for that. But I don't even bother writing it down because I know I'm not going to write it down any place I'm ever going to remember. I'm not going to know where I put it, and I'm not going to be able to find it if I did write it down somewhere. So now he uses his camera phone, takes a picture of the wine label, and he says, and it's, since it's got text recognition, it's searchable, and I can search by where I was at the time and links and meta tags and da-da-da-da. And I was really excited about that, so I took a picture of a bottle of wine, and it did not recognize a single character on the screen.
Oh, well, nice theory.
That'll probably get better over time anyway. So you really like
Actually,
system?
I've noticed...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I really know. I like it, and I've noticed it has been subtly improving over the 3 beta versions I've had it for.
Okay.
It initially had a bizarre bug that if you copied and pasted in something which was RTF, it would put every line into a new paragraph.
Hmm.
And sticky notes, which is where I was importing, in inverted commas, from, are RTF, and it just made them look really terrible.
Oh, dear. That's not good. But they fixed it in one of the beta releases?
Yeah, they fixed it in the one that came out this week. That made me very happy.
Well, that's good. That's good. So, let's see, what else? You were talking about fonts.
Yeah, the font dialogue is just... It has a very, very short list. It doesn't include any of the ones I want. I don't understand why, because if you copy and paste stuff in the font I do like from, say, a sticky note and paste it in, it'll take it just fine. I'll be completely happy with it. But it won't let me pick it. I just want Courier New. I mean, that's what I use when I have to put in Linux commands or whatever. I always put commands and input to terminals and stuff in Courier New, because that way you can tell the difference in an I and an L and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I see.
But no, I can't have Courier New. Anyway, I presume they'll cop onto those kind of things. But really, you know, that's the only thing that's annoying me about it is the choice of fonts. So that means it's probably not a bad program.
Yeah, I'm thinking, especially since it is still in beta, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's an invite-only beta, I believe, or has it gone fully public?
I think it's, last I knew it was invite-only. I know Tim Verporten had 1,000 invites, so I'm sure he probably still has some left. I think I have 3 left, something like that. So if people are interested, I think anybody who gets one gets 5 invites, something like that.
Oh, does that mean I have invites?
Yeah, I think you probably do. If you log into Evernote, it shows you, oh no, you get 10 because I have 7 remaining. So until I have my 7 used up, people can ask for it from me, and Bart probably has them too.
Yeah, so Twitter me for an invite if you need one.
There you go. Oh, what's your name on Twitter?
What is my name on Twitter? It's probably something sensible. Is it Bebo Shots? Yes, it is.
I turned off Twitter to behave myself and not pay attention to that while we were talking.
No, it's Bebo Shots, but it's linked on BartBouchas.ie. There's a little link next to my nice picture of me that says Twitter. So.
Oh, good, good, good. All right, what else do we have up today?
I got a new mouse. I've always been a Logitech user for years. I love their stuff. They're one of the only companies, apart from Microsoft, that do a proper split ergonomic keyboard at a reasonable price. And the Microsoft one doesn't play particularly nice on the Mac, so I won't go near it. The better half has one of those, and not good. Not good at all. Mm. Terrible waste of money. So I have a Logitech one, which I'm delighted with. Have it for years. And I got my boss in work to buy me an identical one in work, so I'm always used to that nice, comfortable ergonomic typing. And it came with a mouse. And the mouse has also lasted years, until the last few weeks. And it would start being sort of momentarily unresponsive, and I think it's because the batteries come loose inside it or something, but it's basically starting to fall apart. And so when I was trying to draw and stuff with a mouse that's jittery, it doesn't work. So I got very grumpy with it one evening and said, right, that's it, lunchtime tomorrow I'm going down to the local computer shop and I'm buying a new mouse. So I did.
Great. What'd you get?
I got another Logitech mouse, of course. I just got a more modern incarnation. Sort of my criteria for the mouse were that it had to be cordless, because I can't stand wires everywhere. And it's very important that it had one of those little buttons at the side for your thumb, because I've started linking those into F9 Expose. Oh. And within spaces, you have far less windows per space now. So F9 has become insanely useful, whereas it used to be useless because I was multitasking so much. So I have really got to rely on that little thumb button for just quickly flipping over and back between windows. Instead of going to the keyboard and Apple tabbing, I'm working around with the mouse, I tap the thumb button, click into the window I want, and it's amazing how dependent I've become on that.
Absolutely, space is pretty useful, I would think. Instead of dragging up to the menu bar or whatever, or doing keystrokes, that might be really nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, I navigate through the spaces with the control key, but this is for when you're in a space getting around the windows, because there's still a nasty bug in spaces where if you have, like, I have 4 spaces and they all have very separate tasks, which is great, but I don't have one application that's in just one window, really, because Finder, for instance, every one of my 4 workflows involves the Finder. It's so fundamental. So I have Finder windows everywhere. And if you Apple tab to the Finder, it's sort of potluck as to which space you'll end up in. And I really wish it would just stay in the space it's in if it can.
But it
doesn't. It always goes back to where it thinks you were last, as if spaces didn't exist. Hmm. And that just drives me demented. So I've stopped Apple tabbing around, and instead I just click the thumb button and click in. So I always stay within my space. I only see the windows in my space. And I found it sped up my workflow immensely. So I got really, really attached to that, and I just didn't want to lose it. The other thing I could not do without in a million years is a scroll wheel.
Definitely not.
So they were my criteria. Wireless, scroll wheel, thumb buttons. And the little Logitech, what is it, the exact model number, LX8, filled those criteria perfectly and more. I have 2 thumb buttons now, although I suppose it's the thumb button and the pinky button, when I look at it that way. So I have the other one set to F10, so now I have both exposés at the tip of my fingers.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm really happy with that. And then the scroll wheel also tilts left and right, which scrolls left and right.
Now, do you actually use that? Do you like that?
I haven't used it much yet, but I do like it in the Finder when I'm reading the properties I don't read very often. Instead of having to go look for that scroll bar to scroll over to see when I last modified a file or something, I just tap over with the buttons. I think it's going to take me a couple of weeks to get used to it, because it's not something my brain is used to having at its disposal, so it'll take me a while to settle into having that as part of my workflow. But I think I'm going to like it, because in the past, I was very often very grumpy about having to go find the scroll bar just to scroll to the left, whereas, because I'm so used to scrolling with the scroll wheel for everything else. Not quite as cool as the Mighty Mouse, where you have sort of omnidirectional scrolling any which way you like, just by using that funny little scroll ball.
That's the only good thing about that mouse.
Absolutely. The Mighty Mouse is an unmitigated disaster with the one exception of that scrolly thing.
So I wish somebody would just come out with a mouse with a little ball on top, and then we wouldn't even have to look at the Mighty Mouse.
Exactly, although they probably had that patented, you know, from here to Kingdom Come. Then the other two features with this wireless mouse has are features that I think should have always existed from the very first day the very first person ever thought to take the wire off a mouse. The first one is a power button. I mean, that's to me fundamental. All my previous Logitech cordless mice have not had a power button. So all night long while I'm lying in bed, I see this very slow red blinking coming from the desk.
And you know that's your battery, cordless dying, right?
Well, every little pulse must take some power, yeah. So it's certainly not helping. Well, this one actually doesn't have a red pulsing light because it's a laser mouse, which is cool. So it's really accurate, really nice, really responsive. And it seems to be an infrared laser or something because I can't see it. So it's definitely not red. But it has a power button. So I hold the button for 3 seconds and it powers off. Straightforward. So at night, power it off. First thing when I get home from work, power it on. I'll turn it off, you know, when I go downstairs for dinner or whatever. But just to save it those probably, you know, this easily 17 hours go by between my going to bed and my getting home from work the next day. So that's bound to be saving me some power.
I would certainly think so.
So that's a pretty obvious feature. I don't know why Logitech hadn't used previously. Although, like I say, it's probably been about 5 years since I've bought a mouse. But it always made me grumpy if it didn't have an off button. And then the other thing is a low battery indicator. The way I knew the battery had died on my old Logitech mouse was all of a sudden the mouse would freeze and the little red light would go away. And that told me, uh-oh, time to go find some batteries. This one has a little light on top, which blinks when the battery is getting low. So it means I can see the blinky light and go, ah, must pick up batteries in the store on the way home tomorrow.
So instead of being surprised with it, too, you know it's coming.
Yeah, I have in work in particular, because at home I always have stashes and stashes of batteries. I buy them in giant big 16 packs, and I always have a few around because I have speakers that use the same size batteries and my wireless mouse and keyboard and stuff. But in work, I don't have such a stockpile because work pays for my batteries, not me. And it's not uncommon for me to come up to reception sheepishly at about 11 in the morning going, I don't suppose there's any batteries. It's like, no. Can I have some petty cash, please? And have to stroll the whole way down Main Street to go buy batteries so I can actually do anything in work.
Well, now, you've been teasing us a long time here. What model did you get?
Okay, it's the Logitech cordless laser mouse LX8.
LX8.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a link in the show notes to your full review, of course. So now,
I think this is a fuller review than my fuller review, but anyway.
Well, they can click on a link to see which one it is. So how much did that set you back?
I don't remember the exact price, but it was more than €30 and less than 40.
Okay, so what is that? 30.
I think it was 35, 45. 38, something like that.
Okay, so around $50. So not cheap.
Yeah, but only I guarantee you that in America it'll be around about $30 or so, because although the exchange rate has now gone boobies up, as they say, it wasn't always like that.
Oh, I love it. Man, I'm looking at Logitech's website. They've got a lot of mice. Now, are you going to be sad when you go to work and you don't, or when you're at home or at work, you carrying it back and forth with you?
No, I'm not carrying it back and forth. I just have it at home. So I am actually in work trying to click the F10 pinky button, as it were, and it ain't working. It's like, ah! Actually, there's one other thing that I'm really happy with, because the old Logitech mice, I mean, cordless mouse, the transmitter can't be that big, but the big blocky lumps of things Logitech used to give you that you have to have somewhere on your desktop, nowhere near a monitor, nowhere near a speaker with a clear line of sight to your mouse. How many such places do you have on your desk?
Right.
I mean, I never do, which is why the range of my mouse is always teeny. If I get more than half a meter away from it, it'll stop working because it's next to my speaker and under my monitor, because that's the only bit of empty desk I have. But this new one comes with an absolutely tiny thumb drive size little radio unit thingy, and it seems to have a fantastic range. And so it's just stuck into my USB hub, and I don't worry about it.
Excellent. So now, the one thing, I have not been really happy with wireless mice. Everyone that I've ever used, you wiggle the mouse and there's a split second delay before the mouse actually starts to move. That's really irritating. Do you get that at all with this?
I haven't noticed it. If it is a split second, it must be very, very split.
Actually, I hate it when people say that. Like when they say it's a fraction of the cost. Well, 99.5% is a fraction of the cost, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not noticeable in any sort of way. I've never been frustrated by it, so it can't be too bad, I guess.
Yeah, I would think you would notice this one. I had a Microsoft one at work that, I just want to pitch it through the window. It's just awful.
Yeah, Remember what I said about Microsoft's keyboards? The same goes for their cordless mice.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've liked some of their mice. I've had a couple of mice of theirs that I really did like. In fact, I pretty much decided that's the only thing I do like of theirs. But this mouse was definitely an exception. By the way,
The old Microsoft mice with little cables coming out of them were fantastic. They were the first mice, like the Microsoft mice were the first ones to regularly have scroll wheels.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've been addicted to the mice with wires just because of that. I just, I don't know. The wires don't bother me enough to be worth all the other hassle, but now I'm looking at this one. This looks pretty good. By the way, it's $40 at Amazon, so it's...
$40, yeah, that's what I would have thought.
Not cheap, but it looks like it's got a lot of features.
Okay, we may have a different definition of cheap. For me, anything under 100 quid is cheap for tech.
Well, I don't think I've ever paid more than about $20 for a mouse, so maybe I'm really cheap.
Yeah, well, anyway, I think it's important because I spend so much time with it that it's important that it work well and that it be ergonomic. And I have to say, this one feels quite comfortable. It's two big, giant... Anyway, go on.
Oh, go ahead. Two big, giant what?
No, it's the buttons are really big, easy to get your fingers on. They click nicely without having to click too far. It's just, it feels good in the hand, which is probably more important than anything else I could say.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, Logitech mice come with drivers. Did you load those?
Oh, good gods, no. No. Oh, never. Logitech and I have a fantastic relationship in terms of their hardware, but a disastrous relationship in terms of their software. I do not ever install it, regardless of what CDs they give me with their stuff. I mean, I'm using one of their headsets. I have all my speakers are Logitech everywhere, including ones with giant big bass thingies under my desk. All my mice, all my keyboards, all Logitech, and have been for years. And I have never, well, I did once install a Logitech driver. Pointless waste of time. All it did was take up system resources and do nothing. One of the reasons I wanted it was because it technically would show me the battery levels in my cordless mouse and keyboard, which would be useful to know. Only it just showed them as being 100% all the time. Always. Even when there were no batteries in it.
Didn't
so
they also
pointless,
have some...
but it gets worse.
What's
oh
that?
Yeah, no. So initially, so when I, yeah, they used to just not work, which is bad. But it gets worse than that. The next version of the drivers, which I didn't install because at that stage I had had enough, the next version of the drivers included Ape, which is, is it Onsanity, right, Ape? The application enhancer.
Yeah, I think so.
Basically, I have serious issues with Ape. I don't think anyone should ship Ape with anything without explicitly warning you that they are poking around in bits of the system which Apple documentation explicitly says do not enter. Giant big no entry keep out sign. There is certain system folders that are specified by Apple as no-go areas for third-party developers. And that's exactly where Ape plugs in.
Oh, wow.
And so Logitech took a shortcut. Instead of actually writing a driver themselves, they sort of used Ape to speed up the process a little bit. So anyone who had a Logitech mouse or keyboard had Ape, even if they didn't know it.
Oh, no.
And this Ape doesn't get updated. It's just sitting there. And Ape had a major incompatibility with the first version of Leopard. Some versions of Ape had a big incompatibility with the first version of Leopard. And you probably remember that when Leopard came out, people were saying, oh, don't upgrade, it gives you a blue screen of death.
Right.
It wasn't Leopard giving a blue screen of death. It was Ape's incompatibility with Leopard that was giving that blue screen of death. So anyone who had Ape up to below a certain version that upgraded to Leopard got this blue screen of death the first time they rebooted after the install. And lots of these people had no idea they had Ape because they had Logitech gear.
Oh,
they hadn't installed Ape, they'd installed the Logitech gear. And so that annoyed me no end, and the fact that the Onsanity guys went, oh, it's not our fault, we've updated in later versions, it's like, no. The whole concept of poking around in those directories is a fundamentally flawed idea, and for anyone to ship that under the hood without giant big disclaimers everywhere telling you that you're doing this, I think is disgraceful. So that I get very grumpy about that. You know, if you want a solid, stable OS, don't go poking around at the bits you're not allowed.
So,
but it gets even, continues to get worse. Well, I'm not sure this is worse, but it continues down that road. So Logitech got a lot of bad press after the Leopard upgrade. So they redid their Logitech Control Center, LCC. And now it doesn't break Leopard. Now it breaks Growl. And it breaks
like
Growl by... Yeah. I don't actually use Growl, but everyone who does loves it. The better half swears by it, you swear by it, everyone swears by it, but I just haven't got around to installing it. But I think there's enough things that make noises and ding and look for my attention. I don't want another one.
Well, I don't. You don't actually have the sound. Have to have the sound on for a growl to be on. Like I have it set to tell me if I accidentally knock my power cord out on my MacBook Pro. Just a little notifier window comes up.
Ah, so if the battery disappears, oh, that's kind of useful. Yeah. But no, I just don't want, like, when I'm off, especially in work, when I'm off and I have a space set up in work which is entirely distraction-free and only has genuine work stuff in it, and then I have another space for email, Twitter, Adium, all that other junk. And when I'm in the work space, I don't want to see anything. I don't want anything popping up on my screen. And unless Growl has some way to say, turn off when I'm in space 2 and turn on when I'm in space 1, I just don't want it.
Yeah. I like being distracted, so I'm okay.
Well, distractions are potentially quite enjoyable, but from a productivity point of view, not good. And especially when you're programming, a 10-second distraction can equal a 10-minute setback because you've lost your place, you've wandered off to look at some picture of cats doing something funny on YouTube, you suddenly have no idea where you were, it takes you 10 minutes to get back into the groove, and the chances are you're 9 minutes into your 10 minutes and another little thing pops up and it's time to go look at some puppies doing something cute on YouTube.
You know, I decided spaces weren't for me because I wanted to do exactly what you're talking about. I said, okay, when I'm in this upper right space, that's what I'm just going to completely focus on the task at hand. And then I realized that I couldn't see my chat window, so I moved chat so that it showed up in every single
space. In every space. And therefore completely ruining the point.
Definitely. Oh, that reminds me. There is a spectacular video. I got to put a link to it in the show notes. It's called An Engineer's Guide to Cats. Oh, wasn't that funny?
Yeah, myself and my office mate Peter spent the whole, it's like 9 minutes long or something, staring at it, chuckling away, going, you must try that with our cats later. Particularly the cat yodeling.
Yes, the cat yodeling is definitely the climax. That's what keeps you going through this long, I think it's 7 minutes, but it's worth it to stay through till he does cat yodeling. But I think my favorite line in it was when he was talking about cat food, and he says, cats are like engineers, they can eat the same food every day. Who else do you know who's like that?
Exactly. Anyway, no, we were actually getting, we've gone down a terrible rat hole again. Oh. But no, so what have the Logitech people done to break Growl? Well, basically, there's a special way in which all programs talk to each other. That's how Growl can be told something by Adium or whatever. There's a sort of a channel, and there's a default channel. And by default, it's pointed at a certain thing. And Growl, the previous versions of Growl up until, I think there's a new one released very recently to fix this so that LCC people can, or Logitech people can use Growl. But Growl uses this default channel that's there especially for this kind of thing to do its magic. And Logitech also use it, but they don't just use it, they edit it. So they take the system default thing and change what it points at.
Oh, no.
So at this point, Suf tries to send messages to Growl, and it doesn't end up where it's supposed to go. It ends up inside a special controller. It ends up not inside a messaging component like it should. It ends up inside a scroll enhancer component instead, even though it's the default system messaging component.
So, in other words, you're not going to load the Logitech drivers then?
No. It now says clearly on the box that they're optional, and it's an option I strongly recommend people avoid. Now, if you're on Windows, maybe they write fantastic drivers for Windows, but on OS X, you know, 10-foot barge pole, you know, to use the barge pole to beat the crap out of your CD, most useful thing you can do.
Well, is this going to wind it up for this week in mouse drivers?
Probably will, actually. I think we've beaten this mouse to death. We did have a little... We had one more little thing to add in, didn't we? A little note I wanted to add. I had said that I discovered Cord, which is the alternative remote desktop protocol client for the Mac, because Microsoft's client had expired and was nagging you all the time. Well, they've copped onto themselves, and one of the features, they've released a new beta, and one of the features listed is that it has no expiry date.
It's still a beta, though, but it just won't expire.
It's beta 3 now, yeah, but it won't expire. It's a worthwhile beta to install, A, because it removes the nag screen, B, because it adds what I think has got to be the most fundamentally obvious function on the planet. You can now go file new connection. Couldn't do that before.
Ah, that
however, it's still teeny bit retarded in how it does it. You don't have two windows within the one instance of RDP. You get a whole extra instance of RDP. So a second icon pops up in the dock for your second instance.
Hmm.
So if you have a lot of them, not good. Yeah. Not good. But we're making progress. We can now have two things at once, which we couldn't easily do before. There wasn't a file new, there was only a file open. So if you had saved a previous session, you could have multiple ones, but you couldn't start one from scratch.
Okay.
Which, yeah, a bit odd. Yeah. I think you might remember I was saying that it had this nasty habit of crashing every single time that you closed it.
Right.
It's maintained that habit.
So
it's changed. Yeah, they have some consistency, only they've changed how it crashes. So it used to pop up the Apple dialogue that says, would you like to tell Apple that a program has crashed? Now Microsoft have implemented their own. So now it says, would you like to tell Microsoft that the application has crashed? And I can repeat this crash 100% of the time now. It used to only happen 90% of the time. Oh. 100% guaranteed if I go start, disconnect, it will crash. And it'll pop up the little Microsoft window. Only, unlike the Apple one, the Microsoft window doesn't show you what it's sending. So one of the things I really like about Apple's crash thingy is it gives you a full list of everything it's going to send to Apple, so you can scroll through it and verify for yourself that they're not sending off anything you don't want them to.
Right.
The Microsoft one says, gathering system information, sending it to Redmond. Have a nice day.
Okay, so to recap, they've got another beta, and just in perfect Microsoft attribute, they've decided to make the fact that it's not working well a feature.
Yeah. Wait, there was one other thing they fixed which made me happy. What was it? Oh, yes. They used to have this lovely little checkbox that said, remember username and password.
Right.
And whether you clicked it or not made no odds, because as soon as you... So, you know, it would remember it when you click the button. You then see your Windows screen pop up. The dialog box would come up. It would fill in the username, but not the password. So you'd have to type it in anyway.
That's helpful.
And that just drives me mad because I'm connecting and disconnecting all the time because I use a Mac and Peter, I share the office with, uses a Linux box and our call tracking system in work is Windows only. So we have a shared Windows box in the corner that we both RDP into, him from Linux, me from the Mac. But we can't be in there together. So I'm constantly disconnecting, you know, to get out of Peter's way. Peter's disconnecting it out of my way. And the fact that every time it would forget the password was just driving me bananas. So now it remembers the password, which is a big step forward. And its integration with Keychain, all well done. So that's good.
Well, good.
I'm still going to use Cord, though. completely. It has a nice tabbed interface instead of all these extra instances when I need to go to more than one place at once. It's just a way, way, way slicker interface. It doesn't crash every time I disconnect. Way, way better product. But since we mentioned that, you know, the Beta 2 client was being silly, the Beta 3 client isn't being silly in that way, but still has its eccentricities.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to cut it off here. I appreciate the update on that, and I'm sure people will enjoyed it. That's for sure. I think.
I hope so.
So we should get going here, Bart. It was fun, as always, getting to talk to you, and I hope we get to talk to you again next week.
So do I, and I must say I'm delighted that ICE has only crapped out once in the entire conversation, which hopefully will be edited out and no one will notice that the connection died.
No one would ever know if you hadn't said that.
Yeah, but I like slagging ICE. It's important. Anyway, until next time, happy computing.
Holy cow, it's 53 minutes into the show. Well, I had a couple things I could have cut out, but I asked the viewers on Ustream if I should cut it out. And I think it went into a rat hole there with Bart for a little while, but they said keep it in. So what the heck? Keep it in. Why not? 53 minutes. And I took stuff out. I mean, there's a ton of material. Probably should have done two separate shows. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Anyway, keep up all these great emails and reviews. I just love getting these. This is fantastic. It really makes my life easy, that's for sure. So keep it up by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Don't forget to click on the Mac Update affiliate link also if you're going to buy that bundle. Don't forget. Anyway, thanks for listening and stay subscribed.